This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have a winter weather advisory for the overnight hours for a number of towns around the Chicago area this afternoon. Cold and damp with a high temperature of 37.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow has just moved positive. It's up 2 points. We're at 25,414. The NASDAQ is lower today by a third of a percent or 23 points, and the S&P down 5. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index coming back from a loss of a tenth of a percent, now off even just a fraction of that. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed to a five-month low of $49.3 billion in November. Imports tumbled the most in 2 years as the trade war intensified. Imports from China alone fell by $3 billion. Mortgage applications down for a third week in a row. Home purchases based on this particular industry measure were down. We've seen elevated borrowing costs, and that has folks taking a second look before they jump in to buy a home. Boy, Snapchat shares are soaring. The company is making more money with the users it has, and it looks like the sagging number of users has finally bottomed out. Looking at the company's last quarterly report, and stock in Snap is up 25.5%. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
We're going to be talking about that Snap story together and this afternoon. And also we're talking about the winter that has been moving everybody around. We're going to talk about that.
Personal Finance Wednesday. When's the perfect age to take Social Security? And what's a contrarian view on the markets now that they seem to have stabilized? How should we invest?
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
An organization representing Illinois' largest companies is calling for a big tax increase. We're going to find out why in our next segment. But right now, the president touted the economy in his State of the Union address last night. Let's talk about where things stand. We're joined by Carl Tannenbaum, chief economist at Northern Trust here in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today, Carl. What did you think about the speech last night?
Well, their economy is certainly performing pretty well, and we often attribute too much credit or too much blame to our chief executive, as the results that we see in the economy are the product of a lot of decisions made by consumers and businesses, and of course, policy is set by both the Fed and the Congress. But after a bit of a scare late last year, it does seem that the American expansion is continuing apace. Very strong employment news again last Friday. The slowing down of economic growth doesn't scare me, at least. We did see the peak of the impact of the tax reform bill in the middle of last year, and so we've been expecting economic growth to moderate a little bit. But while there are threats on the horizon, Chris, I'm not sure that we can call the end of this expansion just yet.
So what would you advise the president if he called you?
I think there are a few things that represent opportunities where bipartisanship is possible. One that I've been touting and that we certainly need in our area is reinvestment in infrastructure of both human and physical capital. Our roads, bridges, broadband, electric grids all are in need of modernization and reinforcement. The risks that we have with decay and those things is substantial, but probably more productively, the return that we would get on those investments would be pretty substantial in higher productivity and also attracting more businesses and people to the area. And for human capital, Chris, the analog there is making sure that we have the right kind of education system at all ages, for all ages, so that we're creating a workforce that is still the envy of the rest of the world, certainly opportunities in our area to do more of that. So those would probably be the top two things on my list.
We have more trade talks scheduled with China. What do you think is maybe the best case scenario now that this has been dragging on for a while? What do you think the U.S. might actually be able to legitimately get out of this, and what would be positive?
Cisco, I'll tell you, the fact that we're talking is positive. We have been trading barbs with the Chinese now for a long while, claims, counterclaims, arrests and counterarrests. And while the headlines are a little bit jarring, I do reassure my clients anyway that this is all really part of the protocol when you have these high-level types of negotiations. I'm glad to see that there's another round. Let's make no mistake, progress on the biggest issues, especially related technology, are not going to be solved in time for the March 1st decision on whether tariffs against China should be increased. But they may be able to announce some preliminary movement that will enable an extension of that deadline, which I think the Chinese would certainly enjoy. And since American consumers are paying the tariffs, make no mistake, I think it would be better off for us as well. The trend is certainly in the upward direction as opposed to where we were 3 months ago.
I saw you quoted in a story about the meeting between the Fed president and President Trump. General thoughts, is that just sort of routine? Is that something that Fed presidents normally do, or is it suspect in some way?
The Federal Reserve is an organization that prides itself on its independence, and I think they need that independence in order to sometimes take decisions which are maybe unpopular in the short run, but best in the long run for the economy. The classic example, for those who remember it, is Paul Volcker tightened up the money supply 35 years ago and threw us into a terrible recession, but ended up taming inflation for a very long time to come. Now, the fact is, though, that the Fed can't operate without political support. It's nor is our Board of Governors have to be confirmed by the Senate. They have to testify periodically, and they do need political support. So meetings between the Fed chair and the president and the Treasury Secretary are not uncommon. I think, though, that after some of the rhetoric that has come out of the White House, including tweets about performance, the Fed does need to be very careful about being seen as taking instructions from the White House. And certainly that's something that that Fed Chair Jay Powell is going to be sensitive to.
There is a business group here in Chicago, and we're going to be talking about this coming up shortly, that is backing a big tax increase for state pensions. Is that a smart move?
The state has a number of fiscal challenges, and at this early stage of the new administration, I think everything needs to be on the table. The fact is that without cogent solutions and a plan, businesses and even some individuals are a little reluctant to start putting down roots in this area. And if we can at least offer them a clear outline of where we might be heading, or that we're considering everything, we might be able to restore confidence in Illinois. It's one of the great places to do business.
Carl Tannenbaum, always good insight. Carl is chief economist at Northern Trust here in Chicago. Coming up, we'll get more insight into solving Illinois' pension crisis through higher taxes. It's being proposed.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Civic Committee of the Commercial Club is calling for big tax hikes to solve the pension crisis in Illinois. Let's learn more from Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, I see personal and corporate tax rates that would go up by 1%. They say it'd bring in about $4 billion. Why would the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club, business leaders, why would they propose this?
Well, that's a good question, particularly since they also want to extend the sales tax to more services, and they want to begin taxing retirement income, which is exempt currently in Illinois. The answer, according to them, is that the state's economy now suffers from uncertainty. We have these huge overhanging pension obligations, $130 billion plus, billion with a B, in unfunded pension liability that they say is discouraging businesses from coming here because they don't know how they're going to get whacked or when they're going to get whacked, so they'll go set up shop somewhere else. They say best end this uncertainty and do it now by coming up with a sure plan to raise money largely to pay off that debt and do some other things.
Is there a sense also, perhaps, in which you do have Democrats essentially running everything in Springfield now with supermajorities? These tax increases are coming. If you get on the bandwagon, you're at least a part of the negotiation. You're a part of what might happen.
There is some truth to that. Although, interestingly, this proposal, since it came out, has been drawing fire from both the political left and the political right. From the political right, from the conservatives, the argument is, hey, our taxes are too high, this is just going to drive more people away. From the political left, the argument is, hey, we know that a graduated income tax is coming, and we think rich people are going to pay most of that, so why raise everybody's taxes? Let's wait to see how much we're going to get out of rich people first.
Can you do this without really requiring workers to make some sacrifices?
Can you? Yes. Is it painful? Absolutely. The difficulty is that the workers argue, and there's some merit to this, that the real problem we're here is not that they didn't put in what they were supposed to, but the state spent money that was supposed to have gone into pensions for other stuff, including worker salaries, by the way. And the Illinois Supreme Court has pretty much ruled that that money is due and owing, even if raising it really squeezes some people. You know, there's some lawyers who think there might be a way around that, but so far nobody has gotten anywhere in court. So what the Civic Committee people are saying is, you know, let's quit screwing around. If you want to try something in court, fine, but it's good that the earlier we pay this and start putting some serious money in, the lower the bill ultimately will be, because we won't have to pay all these carrying costs and interest charges and whatever we're paying now.
How bad is this compared to other states?
We are almost the worst, depending on how you count it. Some people would say West Virginia is worse off. New Jersey has some problems, but the numbers here are pretty bad, and they're even worse if you add in the pension debt in the city of Chicago, where we've made a little bit of progress, but there's still a lot of ground to go. There's a lot of money owed, and somebody's going to have to pay it, or somebody's going to have to have a retirement benefit slash, and right now it looks like the former.
Yeah, it seems like the gamble, and I guess you don't know until you do it, but the gamble is that increased taxes would outweigh the uncertainty for businesses thinking about relocating here or expanding here. And when it comes to retirees, the assumption is you start taxing that income, but that they stay instead of leaving to a state that doesn't tax those benefits.
There's no question that whether who will get hurt worst and whether those things will happen depends on your perspective. What you're saying is what many of the conservatives are saying, that, hey, people are mobile, they can go, they're already gone. The counter to that from these business guys is, if you look at other states that have high taxes, like Minnesota or California, their economies are growing, even though they have high tax levels. So taxes themselves are not the determining factor. There's a lot of other things that go into the decisions, too.
Thanks so much, Greg. Always appreciate you being on the show. Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday. The focus is on couples and money, and when's the best time to retire?
WBBM News Time at 12:25, and this portion of the news is sponsored by Baird. Let's check the markets, and here's Elisa.
Well, Chris, the Dow is higher, but just by 1 point. We're at 25,412. NASDAQ losing 18 points or 0.25%. S&P off 4. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by less than 0.1%. We've got crude oil futures bouncing a little bit higher, up 0.5% to $53.90. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here at Chicago Board of Trade. Corn has been down 1.75 to unchanged. We're down 0.5. Beans have been down 2.75 to up 2.75. We have November's up 2.5 at 9.63. Wheat's been down 2 to up 3.5. July wheat up 2.25 at 5.33. Mixed at the Chicago Board of Trade. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Pete, thank you. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are a little lower. We'll see what's worrying Wall Street. And later, we'll get the view of a market contrarian.
Personal Finance Wednesday, helping couples navigate their money and coordinate plans for retirement.
Flash flooding on the Kankakee River forces water rescues in Will County.
Virginia's Democratic Attorney General admits that he wore blackface at a college party in 1980.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 3. The NASDAQ is down 19. The S&P down 4. Oil today is up nearly 1%.
And we've got 30 degrees at O'Hare, feels like 28. At the lakefront, it's 36 degrees, feels like 31.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are struggling today. To talk about it, give us some insight, we're joined by Nick Raich, CEO of the Earnings Scout, based in Cleveland. The website is earningsscout.com. Nick, not much movement today. What do you make of what's going on?
We're still kind of deciphering through earnings season here. We're through the halfway point of fourth quarter earnings season here. The numbers are coming in better than expected, and certainly the guidance companies have provided is not as bad as feared. Numbers are going lower for the 2019 numbers after companies report here their fourth quarter 18 results, but they're not getting cut nearly as bad as what many were anticipated late last year.
Now, we got a nice kiss from the tax cut last year. So is any of what we're seeing in earnings or guidance this year, is any of that because we expected a little drop off?
Well, that's exactly right. So a lot of the big bump in earnings per share in 2018 last year was because of the tax cuts, lowering the effective tax rate from 35% down to 21% on the corporate side. Now the comparisons, those go away. That's part of the reasons why growth is expected to slow down in 2019, because we're going to actually compare the tax rates, the exact same tax rates year in, year out. So some of that boost in earnings per share kind of was abnormal and a one-time boost, if you will. So the growth is still going to be there. The one thing we're looking at, again, late 2018, the market was starting to price in that the Fed was going to make a policy error, including to keep raising interest rates, and that we were going to go into a first-half earnings recession, meaning negative earnings growth. The expectations are going down to that 0% range for there, but we're probably not going to have, not very likely to have an earnings recession in the first half of the year, and that's why prices out of the gate in 2019 have been off to a strong start.
And the Fed chair also said that it wasn't intending to be back this year. So that satisfied some people on Wall Street. Some of the stocks today that we learned about on earnings, GM, Disney, and the parent of Snapchat, Snap. Any of those feel good to you?
Well, you know, a lot of them, I think it's a great example when you look at, like, Snapchat, that's really rallying here. I think a lot of retail investors, a lot of professional investors have a hard time grasping this concept. Snapchat's losing money, and its stock's up big today, over 20%. And then you have a Disney that reported great earnings, has solid numbers, and its stock is down a little bit. It's because it's a game of expectations. Snap's expectations worked for it to lose even more money, so it's going to lose less money, and it's going in the right direction on the path to potentially profitability in 2020 or 2021. So it's the direction and magnitude of the estimates that moves the stock prices, and that's why Snap's up over 20% today. And Disney, which reports, has very solid earnings, a much stronger financial company than Snapchat, and its stock is kind of going nowhere today after a solid earnings beat last night. And the reason is a game of expectations, and the Street was pricing in great earnings for Disney, and they turned out to be good earnings. And so that how it's a game of expectations is something a lot of people on the Street have a hard time getting, and that's why those two stocks are moving in different directions today.
So when it comes to Snapchat, for the longest time, they were pretty much flat out saying, hey, we may never be profitable. Is Wall Street kind of giving that another thought, that maybe Snap is a decent investment?
That's exactly right. So, yeah, they're still not profitable. But the Street is saying, hey, maybe that's a possibility here by 2020 or 2021. And as the market starts to reprice that in, that, hey, maybe it's going to go to profitability. So earning nothing is an improvement for Snap, where it's been losing money.
Do you see other something like that, other opportunities?
Plenty of there's a lot of opportunities we felt earlier in the year. When the market was pricing in a recession, we saw no recession coming, but we were worried about what Jerome Powell and the Fed was going to do, because it looked like the Fed was going to be an uncharitable Fed this year. When the Fed did an about-face earlier this in January, and then after it left interest rates unchanged last month, now we have a charitable Fed again and accommodating, so we should see earnings expectations, which are getting cut, start to stabilize and start to turn back up. If that doesn't occur, some of this rally can give back some of the gains. We parts of technology which have rebounded here, we would not be buyers of in certain techs that have rallied, but other parts of the economy that were beaten up too much in 2018 have offered great buying opportunities. So that's what's going on. It's really going to be a coin flip for this market on whether we go to a recession in 2020 or not at this point. We think it's still unlikely. But at least we have the Fed that's backed off and not almost guaranteeing one.
Touch on General Motors. Are we seeing that this turnaround plan is working? Is it too early to say that?
It seems like General Motors has been turning around now for 20 or 30 years. This is something that will be a reflection of the economy as well. And if we see an economy which we think has at least 1 to 3 more years of life, because a lot of people have been exaggerating the death of the economy throughout the corrections last year in the market and saying that the cycle was over, we're going to go to recession. If we go to recession, GM's going to sell less cars. If the economy can roll and extend longer than the street expects, and that's our base forecast, GM should do well.
Thanks for joining us today, Nick. Nick Raich is CEO of Earnings Scout in Cleveland, and the website is earningsscout.com. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, couples and money, plus choosing the best time to retire.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour. Today we're talking about navigating finances with a significant other and also choosing the right time to retire. We welcome back to the show Liz Weston, columnist for NerdWallet, author of the books Your Credit Score, the 5th edition, and Deal with Your Debt. Liz, let's begin with talking about money when you're talking about couples. Always challenging, no matter what. Are there any steps to be able to make that conversation, those conversations, any easier?
Well, the first thing I do is an attitude check because, I'm the one who's good with money, quote, in my family. And sometimes it makes me think that I know what should happen. But the reality is there's two people in the relationship. So you need to work it out and, make some compromises. I'm not always right. So it's important to listen to the other person and understand where they're coming from. And if you have problems with it, if it's a constant battle to work something out, maybe you want to invest in a couples therapist or even a financial planner who can help you find a path that works for you.
And when it comes to retirement, obviously that's a tough conversation. When do you take Social Security? A little different when you're talking about a couple because it may not make sense for both of them to take it at the same time.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that happens is women tend to retire when their husbands do, but they're younger. They actually, their income would go up if they continued to work. That's one of the research that they've done is that men's incomes tend to decline when they're in their late 50s and 60s while women's is still climbing. Probably because a lot of them have had time out of the workforce. So it's not necessarily a given that you should retire at the same time. What's even more important is getting the Social Security claiming right. It's really important for the higher earner to delay as long as possible. And the reason for that, it's not just maximizing how much income you get, which is important, but even more important, when one of you dies, the other one is going to have to get by on one Social Security check. So that's going to be a big drop in income. You want that check to be as large as possible, and it's going to be the larger of the two checks you get, so you got to make sure that's as big as possible. Bottom line, the higher earner should delay as long as possible.
How do you guide through this? There's so much so much to know.
There really is, and there's no way to know all of it. That's why I hire a financial planner. A lot of financial planners hire financial planners because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know your blind spots. You don't know what you might be missing. And, some other people who do this 24/7 could spot something that you don't. So as you're approaching retirement, I would say if you're 10 years out, if you're 5 years out especially, hire a fee-only financial planner who can give you a second opinion about your plan to make sure that you're on track.
Is 65 full retirement or not?
No, right now full retirement for Social Security is 66. And that's a bit of a misnomer because you actually can earn an 8% per year delayed credit by putting it off between 66 and 70. So if you wait until your benefit maxes out at 70, it's basically a 32% larger benefit, and that continues for life. It goes up with inflation, unlike traditional pensions, and there's no risk of loss, unlike 401ks. I mean, that's a pretty great deal, a guaranteed 8% annual return for waiting. So it's really hard to match that anywhere else. In fact, you can't. So that's one of the reasons why it's so important to wait if you can.
Liz Weston, thanks for the insight. Liz is a columnist for NerdWallet based in Los Angeles. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, a contrarian view of the stock market.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, stocks are trading a little lower today. Let's talk about some feelings on Wall Street, the contrarian and the Dow theories, which give us some instinct about where the market is really going to go. We're talking with Mark Hulbert, who's investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington. What signs are you reading from the markets right now, Mark?
Well, unlike the situation that was prevailing on Wall Street about 6 weeks ago, when there was so much pessimism about the market that a contrarian had no way to conclude other than the market was going to go up, and indeed it has. Unfortunately, now we are perhaps not quite to the other extreme, but we're all a lot closer to that other extreme. So instead of extreme pessimism, now we have extreme optimism. People are starting to talk about getting back to new all-time highs, which we haven't seen since last fall. And that kind of optimism rarely ends up being satisfied by the market, at least right away. So I would say that from a very short-term point of view, not to be surprised by some more weakness like we're seeing today.
All right. So we may see weakness, but if you sit around long enough and wait, something's going to happen.
Well, that's always the same as I'm trying to market on Wall Street, that something will indeed happen. I mean, I want to, you know, your question becomes a good occasion for me to stress that, you know, when people like myself have an opinion about the market, it's really over the very short term. It allows us to continue to talk about what's going on in the market. But for most of us in our retirements that are focusing, you know, many years, if not decades down the line, we probably should not be trading the market, of course, in the first place. And indeed, over the long term, the market, at least historically, has provided a handsome rate of return, and there's no particular reason to expect it not to continue to do that in the future. So for most of us, for our retirement, we can just, this is like a parlor game that's interesting. We can look at what the market is doing. But if you're a short-term trader, what my guess is that now might be a time to keep some of your money off the table.
I have several stocks, by the way, just as a side note, I've been holding on to for a long, long time because something's got to turn around. Something's got to happen to these
and
stocks.
And this could be it, right?
Yeah, right. Anytime now. Contrarian point of view, when last week or so, there hasn't been any significant movement. Does that make it tough to be a contrarian in an environment like that?
No, not really. One of the advantages of being a contrarian is that you let the market tell its story. When you get to a period of extreme pessimism or extreme optimism, then a contrarian says, okay, time to probably bet the other way. Most of the time, the market is in between those extremes, and what that suggests is that you sit on your hands. That may be the most difficult part of being any kind of a trader, whether you're following contrarian analysis or any system, is that there are a lot of times when the system doesn't really tell you what to do, and so you just have to sit on your hands, and that can seem really, really difficult when the market's doing all these kind of crazy things that it has an ability to do, it seems. So I'd say right now we don't have to predict when that will be, that we get the extreme optimism. I can say we're a lot closer to it now than we have been in recent weeks, and so I would say that's at least a warning sign. But we'll let the market tell its story. If, for example, the market were to continue going up over the next several weeks, and this is unlikely, but let's say what happens is that the average market timer that we track starts pulling money off the table, then that would suggest, well, the morale probably has further to go just because people aren't believing in it. But if, on the contrary, even in wake of days like today where the market's pulling back a little bit, people continue to jump on the bullish bandwagon, that would be a warning sign that we're getting even more extreme of our bullishness.
Mark Hulbert, thanks for being on the show. Always good insight. Mark is an investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Bloomberg checks the markets next. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street. Sponsored by FinishingChicago.com, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is up 1 point, NASDAQ down 25 points, or a third of a percent, S&P lower by 4, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg down about a tenth of a percent. We are importing far fewer products, according to the Commerce Department, which finds the U.S. trade deficit narrowed in November to a five-month low. The gap fell 11.5%, and imports of Chinese goods fell by about $3 billion. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.